A Radiance in the Gulag by Nyolas Adonete. Chapter 6. Interrogation. The Cellars of the KGB. In the cellars of the KGB, the interrogation solitary section, the old methods of torture used during interrogations, as described in the Gulag Archipelago, have been changed for a new kind. In the KGB cellars are hot cells and cold cells. They kept me, Vladis Lapenis, Father Alphonsus Sarkanis, 1983, and many others in hot cells where one is constantly being stifled from lack of air and from heat, perspiring ceaselessly. On the other hand, Genuite Navicte, Olna Viscausite, and others were kept in cold, damp cells with water dripping from the walls. There it was so cold that they were frozen to the marrow and their joints ached. Moreover, they felt so weak that they could hardly walk. They suffered from severe and unexplainable headaches and stomach cramps, and when they lay down, they lacked the strength not only to get up, but even to move a hand. Only after some time would they gradually recover. Vladis Lapenis was kept a long time in a cell, where his whole body began aching. When he scratched himself in his sleep, festering sores would appear. He began having heavy nosebleeds and to feel severe anxiety, fear of the door being opened, etc., when he became extremely weak and asked during interrogation whether upon his death his remains would be turned over to his wife for burial, the Czechists took him to another cell, where all these problems vanished. Vladis Lapenis suffered from hypertension, but after interrogations, and even now that he has returned from Siberia, his blood pressure is constantly very low. Only God knows what the Czechists use in their desire to break the will of those under interrogation. Moreover, they keep you all the time in a cell with a KGB informer, usually a criminal offender who, when discovered, begins to rage and harass you in every way. The KGB cells are deep underground, and only the top of a small window at the ceiling reaches the ground outside the pavement of the KGB yard. The little window is barred with double panes of filthy glass, and you can barely see a patch of sky. To reach that window, one must climb up on a small table, and this is strictly forbidden. Those under interrogation are taken outside for a half hour of exercise daily. It is supposed to be 45 minutes, but the soldiers cheat on the time. In the little yard, similar to a cement cave with high cement walls and floor, and above bars with narrow apertures, the little yards are 4 by 5 paces or a bit larger. All around are the high walls of the KGB headquarters. Throughout the interrogation period, one does not see a tree or a blade of grass. In the corridor of the interrogation isolation section, 3 military guards pace ceaselessly, and they are constantly looking into the cell through a small eye in the door. Among themselves, they curse and swear, especially the most vile Russian profanity, cursing one's mother. When I complained to Major Pilas about the cursing of the Communist Youth League soldiers, he told me with a smile that there was no harm. They do not know how to talk in any other way and use profanity as a connective between words. Such is his communist morality, to curse everything noble and sacred, and only when mingling with foreigners to don the deceiving mask of culture. How sad that there are still people abroad who believe the lying promises, agreements, and goodwill of the communists. The communists promise much in order to cause the lowering of one's guard, and later to cause greater harm to swallow a larger bite. All of the agreements and documents they sign are mere deception, immediately broken in the most cynical fashion. Every dialogue with Satan or his willing slaves is a crime. True love does not consist in helping them to do evil or in believing in their lies, but rather in boycotting evil. The communists, like the serpent in the Garden of Eden, promise much, but bring death. Even though it was very hot in the cell, there was no ventilation. My morale remained good because they had taken me alone and I had not involved anyone else. In thanksgiving to God, I sang hymns, and the guards banged on the cell door, shouting for me to be quiet. Because I would not obey them, they wrote me up in a report to the chief of the isolation section and personally complained, "They've brought us a long playing record and there's no way to stop it." Soon after, I began losing hair dramatically and losing weight. The KGB has ways of wearing down those under interrogation with the idea that one is physically weakened, the will is also weakened, but they do not know that even the weakest person, supported by Christ, is unbreakable. Petrosevicus interrogated me for about 2 months, and when he could not get me to talk, he gave up on my case. He also threatened me constantly with a psychiatric hospital, and he ridiculed all believers. "You are cowards!" As soon as you wind up with us, you're all head like rabbits for the bushes. You keep quiet. You don't answer questions. You give no testimony. Revolutionaries used to make the courtroom their tribunal. They used to speak the truth to your face, but you are cowards. Don't laugh at believers, I advised him. You had better pick up the scriptures and read the passage about David's battle with Goliath. It is most apt for the present situation. You, the KGB, are symbolically that Goliath today. Thousands of staff persons, hundreds of thousands of agents and informers. You have all the best means of detection and eavesdropping. In your control is all the power. The army, the militia, the prisons, the psychiatric hospitals. As for deceiving the people, you have had special training in that, and 20 years of practical experience while we believers, weaker than little David, not only lack a slingshot and a stone, but you have even pulled the little crosses from our necks. Nevertheless, we, just like the little David, go up against you in the name of the Lord of hosts, and if the good God wishes, we will have our day in court. Just wait a little. But this was in the future. For the present, Rimkus struggled with me for about 2 months, and not getting anything out of me, turned me over to the assistant chief, Kazus, of the interrogation section. According to Chronicle number 28, interrogators also questioned many witnesses. Neoma's relatives were summoned, as were her acquaintances, but they were still found no evidence against her. At the beginning of 1975, the KGB intercepted a letter from Poland addressed to Neoma. Henryk Lachwick was not aware that she had been arrested. In his letter to Neoma, he wrote about his 1974 stay in Lithuania. In February 1975, the KGB agents Plastas visited Poland to see Lachwick. The KGB agent asked about his visit to Lithuania and also whether Neola had spoken about the Chronicle of the Catholic Church in Lithuania, persecution of the priests or believers in Lithuania, and whether she had given him any reading material. The replies were negative. The KGB was aided by Neola's cousin, Vladas Saldanas, and on March 25, 1975, Regina Sedente, wife of Vladas Saldanas, took issue number 8 of the Chronicle of the Catholic Church in Lithuania to KGB headquarters, although at the trial she would testify that she had found said issue on her husband's desk, but did not know where it came from. Neola had not given her anything to read. The very first day, when Czechist Kazus received no answer to a question in connection with the case, he began shouting, "You schizophrenic! It seems as though you are not only the interrogator, but also a psychiatric genius," I told him in surprise. "You've hardly even seen me, and you are so firm in your diagnosis." "Yes, I am a psychiatrist," Kazus confirmed. "And when they take someone to the crazy house, I am the first to sign." "To my knowledge, schizophrenics are most often victims of a disease of megalomania. Since you consider yourself to be a genius, it would be best for you to take care of your health," I advised him. Kazus blanched from anger and began pacing about the office. After that, he began to threaten and intimidate and even to show me pictures of the Lithuanian partisans, which had absolutely nothing to do with my case. They questioned me the entire day, and when a soldier escorted me in the evening to the KGB cellar, my prison, I requested paper and wrote a protest about the prosecutor, with copies to the chief of the KGB and to the chief of the interrogation section. In my statement, I protested against the hooliganism which the Czechist Lieutenant Colonel Petrokavas and Major Rumkus and Kazis engage in during interrogations. They force people to make statements by threatening confinement in the psychiatric hospital. In my petition, I emphasized that I was not opposed to psychiatric expertise, but only against the Czechists constantly ridiculing human dignity. I said that it would be better for them to beat me, because physical wounds heal more quickly than moral trauma. I refused to go for interrogation unless the investigators put a stop to this hooliganism. For about 2 weeks, they did not take me for interrogation, and after that I received from the KGB prosecutor, Bakus Siunas, the following reply. "Investigators have a right to make psychological tests, but in this case, they see no need." Kazus interrogated me just one day. After Bakus Siunas' reply to my protest, and much-touted Czechist Vautas Pelas began interrogating me. When the soldier took me to the interrogation, Pelas asked, "So you're complaining, are you?" "I'm not complaining, but protesting," I answered. "You see," said the Czechist, "I've been working here for over 20 years. I've seen all sorts of iron men during that time. For a week or two, they would maintain some spirit, but after that, their chins were dragging on the ground. But it's already the 5th month that you, under these conditions, have been walking around from morning till evening smiling. We've never seen anybody like you." It was not on account of my good spirits that your Czechist colleagues have threatened me with confinement in the psychiatric hospital, but because I won't make statements for them, I interrupted Payless. So, if you would just give us one statement, we would let you go home, Payless deceitfully promised. If you gave me eternal youth and all the beautiful things in the world for one statement, which would cause some trouble, then those years would turn into hell for me. Even if you keep me in the psychiatric hospital all my life, as long as I knew that no one had suffered on my account, I would go on smiling. A clear conscience is more precious than liberty or life. I do not understand how you, whose conscience is burdened by the spilled blood and tears of so many innocent people, can sleep at night. I would agree to die 1,000 times, rather than be free for 1 second with your conscience. Major Payless blenched and hung his head. Momentarily, he seemed petrified. I understood that he recognized the depths of his depravity, but lacked the strength or perhaps the will to rise from that quagmire. Oh, my return to Superior. I found out that Payless's past is truly terrible. After some time, the poor Czechist picked up his head and angrily threatened. So that's how it is. Then we'll kick you out of here right now and use your name. We'll carry out raids and arrests as though you did betray people. Here he named a whole list of the best people. It would be nothing for us to forge your signature under the records. So, you see, your friends will turn their backs on you as a traitor and won't give you the time of day. You frighten me, I smiled. Let everyone turn away from me. I don't need people's approval. The only thing I need is a clear conscience. As for your time of day, keep it. We know everything now anyhow, Payless persisted. If you know everything, then why are you questioning me? I asked him. Not everything, he hedged, but a lot. To intimidate me, he began to tell me, on such and such a day, at such and such a time, so and so, all accurate, came to see you, and you served them a prune compote. I felt uneasy, not wishing to implicate innocent people. Mentally, I prayed to God to help me, when I suddenly remembered a very humorous incident, which had just happened in the cell, and burst out into the most spontaneous laughter. Payless had expected anything but this laugh of mine. He was so distracted and confused that he fell silent, gaping, and looking at me very surprised for a few minutes. He knew that when he had been telling me, caused me no laughter. He must have thought that I was acquainted with the legal nicety that whatever the Czechists discover in snooping around has no legal value until people themselves, frightened by the Czechists' knowledge, admit it. But in reality, I did not know that. From that time on, the next 6 months of interrogation, Payless did not mention what they had discovered in spying on me. One day, he began to praise me profusely. Throughout my career, I have never met anyone like you who has done so much good for people. I asked him why he was praising me so highly. It's not flattery, but the truth, said the Czechist. And in spite of the fact that I have really tried to do only good for everyone, I said to him, at my trial, you are going to give me a greater sentence than you do to murderers. Yes, you are going to get more than murderers, because you know too much, affirmed Payless. The next day he called me and other believers who had been arrested, the late Father Virginius Jovis and Petrus Blumpus, fanatics. That appellation fits you yourselves best, I told him, because you try with all your might to make us atheists. But believers love all people, because Jesus Christ said, what you do for anyone, you do for me. We fight only against evil. For you we feel sorry, and if necessary, we would give our lives for you. You know that. Yes, Payless knew it. But in spite of that, he wrote in the space specially left in the witnesses' depositions, after they had signed them and departed, that they had testified that I was a fanatic. I saw that falsification when I looked over the case against me before the trial. On my return from Siberia, I asked those witnesses whether they had said I was a fanatic. Not one of them said so, and some of them did not even know the meaning of the word. The Czechists charged everyone who was on trial for religion with religious fanaticism. From this, it is clear that there are secret instructions from Moscow to this effect. One time, when a soldier brought me in for interrogation, there were two other Czechists in the office with Payless. This used to happen often because Payless mentioned that he is afraid of me, since during the raid I had been able to destroy letters in front of 12 Czechists. I don't know what she might do, he had said. So when we were rarely alone in the office. In the presence of the two Czechists, Payless stated, you believers are never satisfied. If it's not one thing, it's another. Do you think you would have fared better under the fascists? I don't know what would have happened to us under the fascists, I replied, but I do know that you are worse than the fascists. Payless jumped up and shouted, what? We are worse than the fascists? Yes, I replied, The fascists committed a great crime, but they did not hide it. They stated openly whom they destroyed, whom they intended to enslave, and everyone knew all about it. You commit the same crime, but disguised as liberators and brothers, while behind your back you hold the same bloody knife. What could be worse in a human being than hypocrisy? Since you are hypocrites, you are worse than fascists. I'm going to put that in the record, shouted Palis, snatching the piece of paper from the table. Write it down, I calmly told him. I will repeat everything for you, word for word, and sign the deposition. Palis, however, did not have enough nerve to enter my statement in the record, and he did not write a word of it. During the 10th month of my interrogation, Palis showed me a picture of myself and asked what I could say about it. I was seeing the postcard-sized picture of myself for the first time, and I understood that they had enlarged it from a small passport photograph, which they had found during the raid. In order not to implicate new individuals, I said, "If this has nothing to do with my case, and you do not take down my statements, I will tell you what I know about this photograph." Palis assured me, "I give you the word of an investigator that has nothing to do with your case, and I will not enter it into the record." I told him that I was seeing my picture in this size for the first time and that someone had enlarged it from a passport photograph, reproduced it, and distributed it so that people who did not know me could have that picture. But when I finished speaking, the Czechists began entering everything in the record. "What happened to your word?" I asked him. Palis smiled sardonically and said, "That's called legal astuteness." "If you consider lying legal astuteness, then as a sign of protest, I'm not going to speak to you at all. From this moment on." I remained silent 2 weeks. Two or three Czechists and Prosecutor Bakonas would come to the interrogation sessions and try to get me to talk, but since I remained absolutely silent, after 2 weeks they closed the case. Palis had ridiculed me the whole time for not knowing anything and for not being acquainted with the legal niceties, and when he finished interrogating me, he hissed through his teeth, "Well, aren't you tough?" When they closed the case, I breathed easier. Thank God the terrorizing of witnesses has ended. Czechus Skaldus and Vincus Placatus contributed, but Palis especially. Vincus Placatus terrorized Bron Gebatke, even when he met her on the street. "Your place is with Njola in prison." Friends and relatives, left in freedom, always suffer more pain and worry than the prisoner. Since I had refused an attorney, I acquainted myself with the brief against me. Of the many witnesses questioned on the matters reported in the 3 issues of the Chronicle, in spite of the Czechist threats, everyone testified that the reports were true, but on June 16th through 17th, they tried me for libel, without having a single witness.